Perfect.
Good evening, everyone. Here we have one of my favorite idols and also one of the greatest musicians we have around. His name is Eamon Hayden, if I pronounce that correctly. I actually
Perfect.
met him surprisingly through online. I was doing an event for HMV at Canterbury's location, and I played a lot of my music from MXQ, Fear the French Planet. MXQ is my music name. Eamon Hayden goes by his actual name. And we've been doing sort of like yin yang experiments with our music as of late. But without further ado, let's go and introduce him. How do you do there, Eamon?
I'm very well, thanks for having me on your show. And it was very interesting how we met over Instagram, and then how we started to collaborate on our work. And it's been quite an experience because we both are very different artists in style, and also we're living in different countries. And it's so interesting how we managed to put together a project of where you've done a very interesting mix of one of my works, and I've done an interesting piece on one of your works. And as different artists, it's come out with a very interesting result. And in June, we're going to have it released. And I'm really looking forward to it because it's very interesting how two people from two different countries can come up with such a result. And I think the audience are going to really enjoy the experience as well.
From the work that we have done, I would say so myself.
So that's kind of the story that we've got to tell the audience. So that's where we're starting anyway. I'm mindful that we've got a little technical delay, so if there's apologies on my side if the internet is slightly slow.
No pressure there, Morton. To give a bit of background information on Eamon Hayden, he's a musician who I believe you are from. Roscommon.
That's correct, yeah. Roscommon is a rural county in Ireland, and so I've been living here. I grew up in this area, but I've lived away in Dublin and other parts of Ireland as well, but I've moved back to my home area. So I'm living in a rural area, but like in today's world, we've got very good internet connection, and especially post-COVID, I've gotten used to working at home here. So we're very much connected, but I'm living in quite a rural area, and I suppose music is a way of connecting with people and connecting with the wider world through music.
Well, that's certainly important there. Usually, in times of crisis, people often will hone in on their crafts, either to pass the time or find something that they never have done before. Within your case, how did you get your start in music? Was it because you were in previous bands before, or like through university?
Well, what kind of got me into it really was I do a lot of with the visual arts nearly before more, nearly more so than music. But with the COVID pandemic and during that time, I was quite interested in music, but I was also quite interested in synthesizers and sound engineering in general. And I was very surprised with the scope and what you can do through synthesizers. And they're very accessible for people because you can download either free or very cheap versions of synthesizers on your mobile phone and on your smart devices. So the access point is very accessible for people. And even your DAW or your workstation on the computer, you can have free versions or you can have very low cost versions. So it was through the interest in the technology to begin with that I started to play around with synthesizers. But the other side of it is that although there is a technical aspect to music, music is something that you can, I suppose, it's a form of communication. And even if you're not classically trained as a musician, by true experimentation, find your own space within music. And there's an awful lot of options for people, through, in my case, synthesizers to start expressing myself through music. And by recording it as my improvisations as I go along, that's how a song has come together, and that's my starting point. So it was nearly a true accident, but it was also by the fact that the world was going through a pandemic at the time, and we all needed to invent ways in which we could, I suppose, try and get ourselves through this crisis of the time.
Oh, I'd say you've done very good at it, from my experience, even though we only really knew each other since August or September, 2023.
That's
But
correct,
a
yeah.
whole lot has happened through that time with your releases that you've made with Western Shore and your album Hibernia and
Yeah.
several many others, which sort of emphasize what people would say in the presses is like new age music or sort of ambient electronica. I don't know, do you consider yourself new age or ambient?
I tend to go on the ambient end of the scale and kind of cinematic. There's a kind of a classical electronic mix in my music. So it's all done through synthesizers and through virtual instruments and through designing the sound around that. But what goes through my mind when I'm creating it is I try and evoke a feeling or an emotion of some kind or other and express it through music. Now, in the beginning, you might not come up with a coherent song. But if you bear with it, and if you're recording yourself through, in my case, Ableton, like the song will start to come together, and it's like, I suppose it's a form of jazz in a way. Jazz is an improvised music. When you just go with it and go with how you're feeling, as opposed to trying how you're thinking, a song will emerge, and it's through that then that you tell a story. And it's again like Hibernia is a story of Ireland or the island of Ireland and different mythology that goes with that and different cultural references to that. The Western Shore, again, it has a different theme. Where the Eagle Flies, again, a different theme. And it's really for it's expressing yourself. So in the beginning, you might not get the words together or get the notes together. It might not make sense in the beginning, but when you stick with it and when you record yourself, recording media is, eventually you'll start to come together. And once you've got a foundation of a song, that's when you start to work on it, and that's when you start to engineer it. And at the end of it, then you've got a song, and you go through the releasing process.
I think that's a very appropriate way to put it. Usually, when I make music, I usually don't have a particular aim in mind. I usually follow with a melody or sort of like a drum beat pattern. I stick with it and then try to add layers upon layers upon layers.
Absolutely.
Compared to MXQ, Eamon Hayden has a more minimalist setup, but the textures and soundscapes and pads from the synth that he uses are certainly, like you said, cinematic and orchestral, which adds a
Absolutely, yeah.
richness to it that harkens back to the days of Giorgio Moroder or Tangerine Dream. People from the electronic music presses, they always obsess about Jean-Jacques Perry or Jarre and people like that. I'm sure those are some influences that you very much had either when you were a young lad or even just recently.
Yeah, well, you've got like I mean, here there's I've got a record shelf up here, and you might have heard of Tangerine Dream. They're like 70s, 80s. It's Tangerine Dream. There's a collection of songs there, and it's very much kind of atmospheric in nature, and it's to like one of their songs is Journey Through a Burning Brain. That's kind of evokes inner thoughts, inner feelings, and the likes. And really, when from my experience of doing music, is that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to communicate, you're trying to express. And let's say, even though let's say MXQ and Eamon Hayden have a very different maybe styles, it's still the same kind of process, because MXQ is trying to express yourself through, say starting off with percussion and then adding layers after layers, but subconsciously you're going with a feeling, and that's what we do. we go with what starts off as a foundation. We don't really know what brings us to that initial starting point, but something comes out of it, and it's that something that's the communication, and that's the feeling. And I think nearly every song or artist that's out there, the song was never designed in the beginning. It kind of happened through a process, and it's when you trust in that process that something comes out of it, and that's what you develop, and that's what it ends up being the end result.
I could totally get that. So enough for your music is a very minimalist but layered in many respects, and
very much so,
Tangerine
yeah.
Dream was an influence. Actually, I could probably hum one of their songs right now.
Yeah.
From Risky Business, most people remember it from.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a Zeit, one of their other albums, and like, to me, it's really sci-fi and it's really modern. And you know, like back in the day when I was growing up, like we had Star Trek and we had technologies that didn't exist. But now we're living in the world where you got artificial intelligence and all, you know, we had Terminator, which was a film about that of the 1980s, 1990s. And now we're in that era where these technologies have come to fruition. But when you think back to when Tangerine Dream, you know, like CDs were probably in their infancy, and there was certainly no music streaming at the time, or the internet even wasn't widely available. So like these were very, another band that really has made an influence on me would be Orbital. They're an electronic band. And again, they would have been out like during the 1990s and stuff. And like their music is very, very modern and cutting edge. And these would be influences. And, you know, I suppose it's quite surprising how electronic music from the beginning through in the early days, how it's still as fresh and as relevant now as it was back then.
I would say so too. When people think of the earliest type of music, they usually think of Kraftwerk. I'm sure if I have never heard of Stockhausen, who I believe was sampled on Idiotic, the Radiohead song from the Kid A album that people either love or hate. Now, through my experience with Orbital, you're speaking my language, because I remember listening to them when I was a teenager. I used to watch MTV Darts a lot, and they usually played it like in the mornings on their chilled sessions.
Yeah,
I don't know if they have it on the Irish feed of Sky or Virgin Media, but you've had to have been there 2005 or 6. It was a great time to listen to music on the telly. That's how I got to know about a lot of the music in question that I like. You know, not only Tangerine Dream, but Boards of Canada, and Aphex Twin, Square Pusher, Funky Porcini, Mr. Scruff. It runs the gamut, really. Because you're an independent musician. Not tied to any sort of contract. How much have you had in terms of like trying to promote your work to advertisers and like companies that might put your music as needs to put on hold when you call in your bank?
What I find, or what I found in the beginning, is that I got the interest in the synthesizers, and I thought that I'd never be able to play, I'd never be able to produce music, I'd never be able to get it out there. It would never end up on Spotify or Apple Music. That's where I began. It was pandemic, and who's going to want to listen to somebody who's in their 40s who, you know, hasn't been in the media? Then I found, well, actually, you know, getting a distributor, you know, that's straightforward. And then lo and behold, I got my song onto the streaming platforms. Well, hey, I was suddenly thrown into the deep ocean. But from the very beginning, I feel that I've had a very strong drive to deliver the music to an audience. Now, in the beginning, I thought that the streaming networks, that their algorithms would deliver the music because they'd listen to how good the music is, and that's how it would work. But actually, it's you yourself that has to deliver the music. It's through your own. People need to see you, the person, in the same way as, let's say, I am very enamored by, say, Orbital or Tangerine Dream. You know, but I'm interested in the people as well. I'm interested in the human that brought out that music. And people, when they're listening to your music, they want to see something of you in that. So even though there's this AI technology coming up, that's good, but people are looking for the human. What's the human dimension of this? So I've been self-promoting and trying to reach out to an audience, and that's how we met as well, because we were both reaching out to find an audience, and that's how you find other artists and how you get to collaborate. Now, there you do make mistakes when you're trying to do marketing, and it's definitely been a learning curve. But of late, I've been kind of streamlining social media, and I've been kind of trying to up my game in terms of how I produce my work and how I deliver it to a public audience. And there's a lot to it, and I think that what people need to understand is that you actually have to seek out your audience. It won't come to you. You have to go to it, especially when you're not a performing artist, because I work in a studio. I'm in a rural area. I'm completely by myself when it comes to making music. So it's for me to seek out the audience, because the streaming networks, they will, you know, it doesn't work that way. I know an awful really very talented musicians, and they may not have promoted their work, and therefore it's not being heard. So there's something really driving me strongly to seek out an audience, and that's how I'm getting the audience. In terms of getting onto a label, well, I kind of gotten used to kind of waving my own flag and gathering my own audience. So I'd be very sad to hand that over to somebody else, because I kind of gotten used to reaching out to people. And I found that there's magic in that, because again, you know, how we met was true. I'm still growing, and I think I'm happier in the independent artist space.
Totally reasonable. I know some of my personal connections with other musicians I interviewed on YouTube, many of them have either parted ways with a major label or done independent self-releasing, even if it comes at the expense of perhaps lower advertising, not as much in terms of revenue from album sales or streams, especially with everything being digitized nowadays. You know, back in your day, everyone could get like the cassette or the CD, if that word. That's how I was for me in my childhood or teenage years. I'm in my 30s. You're on 45?
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit. Yeah, I'm 48. So, and where did the time go? I mean, that's the bit that's kind of I'm finding scary. But anyhow, I feel younger than I ever do, actually, in terms of how I view the world. I wish I felt like this when I was in my 20s. I'd have had much a more pleasant experience of life. But because, you know, I think that in one sense, there's a kind of a democratization of music, because it's a bit like I got an interest in the synthesizers, and lo and behold, you can get onto a distributor and you actually can get onto the streaming platforms. And it's now easier than ever to do that. And even if you're an extremely talented musician, you know, you can get your stuff onto the streaming platforms. And there's nothing wrong with not doing the marketing or not doing the publicizing. It's not about the numbers. It's about getting yourself heard and getting your work put there. But when you want an audience in terms of numbers, you really do have to seek it out, because I'm kind of saddened by the fact that there is an awful lot of artists who are afraid to have their voice heard when it comes to delivering themselves in front of people, because the streaming platforms themselves don't put you there. It's you yourself that put you there in terms of the audience. So in a way, having a label is, it's probably great in terms of they will do marketing for you, and an independent artist might be at a disadvantage there. You then have a lot of control over, you know, how you connect with people, how you communicate. You don't have people telling you what to say. You speak your own voice, and you've got an awful lot of scope as an independent artist to just be yourself. And if you're not really, if it's not a, it, for me, it's not about the money. It's more about my connection with people. And there's a lot of opportunity for people to connect through music publicly with the current status quo of where you can now publish your music online and get onto these platforms. So there is a great opportunity actually in one sense at the moment. I think things are changing. Even social media doesn't feel as familiar as it used to be, because there seems to be a seismic shift in terms of how people are interacting over the internet. And I think also the COVID pandemic, when people had to work from home and stuff like that, that, you know, there's been a lot of cultural changes as a result. So there, on the one hand, there's opportunities, but on the other hand, there's challenges, because how do you rise above the technology? How do you compete with the technologies that are there? You know, how do you get your human voice through? Because it seems to me that, you know, a few years ago, let's say if you're on Instagram, you posted a picture and it was quite straightforward. Now there's kind of a pressure to produce reels, to produce stories, to produce. So there's a in one respect, there's an awful lot of pressure to be seen. But it will be interesting to see how things are in maybe 5 years' time. Because I think that there's a cultural change going on at the minute in terms of how people communicate over the internet, over social media. And, you know, it's kind of watched this space, because I think times seem to be changing very quickly.
I would say so too. For me, it just feels like oversaturation. Maybe if I was in my 20s, in the late 90s, I probably would have had the opportunity to, pardon me, shell out more material, probably get my demos passed through for certain labels, particularly Warp and Ninja Tune, which I'm a great fan of because they influence a lot of music that I make on myself. As far as what we're concerned, I will be interested in doing like a sort of exchange between us as far as questions that I asked you, and you can even ask me questions as well about my music, but that's entirely up to you.
Absolutely. I think it's great that we have formed a connection, because it's interesting how we managed to come up with the collaboration, because neither of us told each other what to do in terms of the artistic direction of how we were to handle each other's songs. It was very interesting, the results that came out of it, in both how the similarities and in the contrast. There's a form of painting, actually, where one person starts the painting and a different person finishes it. And it's like, and you don't give somebody an instruction on what to do. And I think that's what we've done musically in our collaboration. And I think there's a really good opportunity for the public to do the same. That's one of the good things about today's music industry or environment, is that there is this opportunity to collaborate. And I suppose 100 years ago, people used to be pen pals, but in today's modern world, it's like what we are doing now. It's been through internet, and you know, that's how friendships are formed. And I think that the audience are going to have a really nice surprise in June.
The 3rd of June. From a previous message.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Oh, that's one of my instruments there. Anyhow, yes, it's coming out in 3rd of June, and, you know, it's going to be a nice surprise for people, and it's going to be very interesting from your audience's point of view and from my audience's point of view, is they're going to see a different side of us, artistically speaking, and it'll be interesting to see how a person from a different genre interprets your work. So it's going to be like, from my audience's point of view, an insight into your work, and it's also going to be an insight for your audiences to see into my work. And the longer I've been doing this, the more I've appreciated the different genres that are there and the commonalities within the work. Because even though, let's say, you start off with a percussion, where I might be starting off with, let's say in this case, I've got a synthesized violin there, you know, it's still a communication. And, you know, there's an awful lot of common ground between the different genres. And it's really opened my eyes as to what's possible with music.
I would say so too. I know from our ends, you're on the more sort of ambient end of things. I can vary between genres depending on my mood. Although, yeah, there is overlap on a few occasions, particularly when it comes to a song that actually was my most popular one up until Test Patterns from my album Sex Cells, is Uplifting in the Wrong Way.
Absolutely.
Which has that sort of mellow Eamon Hayden vibe about things, and I didn't even know who he was when I made that song. I made it in 2022, the very end of that year, around almost Christmas time. It was just like a nice little melody I wanted to make, particularly because I was a bit worried if I sample from a particular show I used to watch, and there was a song on there, I would have to face like some sort of royalties and copyright lawsuits. I didn't want to do that, so I decided to get into the synthesizer music, particularly because I didn't want to have to worry about copyright violations and paying royalties to other artists by mixing and sampling a lot of their records. If I do so, I have to conceal it in a lot of filters or back mask.
You always have to be erring on the side of caution, and you know, because and you also want to credit people's influences in your work. Sampling, though, the great thing about sampling is that you can go out with, say, your mobile phone or whatever your recording device is, and take ambient sounds of nature and different environments, and even the ambient sound of the street, the people passing, the traffic, and then make music out of it. I find that just fascinates me, and that's the opportunity that people can have. And it doesn't have to be an expensive piece of equipment. It can be your mobile phone or whatever it is at hand, and then you can, I use Ableton, but whatever your DAW is, or whatever the equipment is, you can...
I use GarageBand.
Brilliant, yeah. And you can then incorporate that within the song, and it will sound really different. Like, so you'll be surprised how the ambient sound of traffic will blend in with, say, a percussive element or an instrument of some kind or other, and you come up then with something that's very unique. And you know, so and you can, my experience of your work is that there is so much play with, you know, different environments, different feelings. There's very strong percussive elements, and the combination of bringing these all together, you know, it brings a great feeling to your work. And I've found that even especially as we've collaborated, it's been given me ideas as to directions that I can go myself in terms of music. And you know what, you know, the fact that you can make them, incorporate them in very inventive ways, and you can see that through your work very strongly in how interesting the story is that you tell through your music. And and also when you couple that with your social media presence, it tells a story, and it's a very strong story. And and it's definitely been very inspirational for me to have interacted with your work and interacted with you at a personal level as well.
So thank you for the comments. made about my work. I find that quite honourable. I know for you, you quite put a lot of technicality into it as well. I know for you said for Ableton, because I use GarageBand, it's a little bit more involved in terms of the technical effects and presets and plugins that you can put on there, and also other musicians that you use, including a friend of mine who lives in Santee, and she uses Ableton as well. As far as I'm concerned, because we're doing a second part of the interview, do you have any questions for me in regards to my music? Because I've asked it for you. We can alternate.
Absolutely. Okay, so we met through the Instagram, and we got to know each other's work, and it was very interesting how we initially met. And I was very intrigued by what struck me was the atmospheric elements to it, and I particularly liked, you know, many of the songs. And over the time that we've known each other, we've exchanged points of view about both of our music. What would have initially been your entry into music? Like, where was your starting point?
Well, I've been making music since 2007. I actually managed to sneak into Apple stores and PC World and try to make an entire album on those iMacs that they usually would have on display. I had to be a bit discreet about it so I wouldn't get in trouble with the store clerks who worked there, but I managed to get like a CD plus R and save all the songs I made on that MacBook, or sorry, the iMac, and somehow, you know, put them onto my computer at the time, which was like a big bulky Windows XP, and keep storing it from there, trying to make an album out of it. But I went a bit more professional and tried to do the Spotify streaming thing only just fairly recently, like at least 2021, 2022, when I released Chaos, which was an album that was not really made with my fingers. It was actually all sort of like royalty-free loops that I used from Soundtrap. Ultimately, with Catastrophe, I started experimenting a bit more, and actually is the first album I started doing where I would make it with my fingers on a MIDI synthesizer that was an iPad that I had to sell mainly because I needed the money at the time. But I was very happy to actually have made music without using sampling or excessive amounts of loops. And I didn't even get an education, really, in music, except for like doing the recorder, which you do at primary school.
I find that interesting about how in both our cases that we didn't get a formal education into music. Would you think that in certain ways that's been an advantage, in the sense that you've had to come up with inventive solutions into bringing your work in music out there? Has there been advantages to having to improvise to make your music be heard?
Well, usually when I make songs, I generally don't have a sort of script in mind, if I put it that way. I usually just go with the flow as it is. Although there are times where I do think I could probably build up a concept around this. So when I was making Sex Sells, which is the most recent album, and I decided to, you know, go for the controversy element, since it's got partial nudity, kind of a riff on Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix, I, you know, was thinking, okay, do a mix of interludes and songs like I did with the other albums, but try to make it a bit more sexy than I did with the previous ones, where it was a little bit more sinister and a bit... Well, Catastrophe went for the sinister. Fear of the French Planet went for the jazzy. Sex Sells went with the sexy and the jazzy and the sinister, so it's a mix of all three things, if put it politely.
One of the things that I notice about your work is that there's a very strong narrative, as you've heard me, there's a bit of interference there. like you said, there's a narrative to the different albums that you've produced, from Sex Cells to Chaos and to the middle album, the Fear of a French.
Yeah, Fear of a French Planet, and then Catastrophe. Catastrophe is
Yeah.
the first one I made, without any sort of royalty-free loops. But yes, well, much of it's more or less playing upon my satire and paranoia a little bit, because I'm a bit of a news addict. I always read up on stuff that's happening around the world, and a lot of it's quite horrible. I'll try to keep the politics to a minimum, but some of those things really do concern me, and it sort of reflects in the creative aspects in terms of the artwork, and then trying to sort of exploit modern trends for satirical effects. So that's where the whole, the world is blown apart on Catastrophe, the Grenfell Tower fire on Chaos, and then a picture of a Japanese anime girl is, people sort of like to sexually commodify on Sex Cells, the Fear of a French Planet I did. Mainly just to sort of throw people off, really. So it changes with the weather, but hopefully with the next album I'll be doing, not to give too much away, I'm going to try to stick in that controversy element a little bit more. That is, if Vladimir Putin doesn't invade the United Kingdom and tries to kill us all.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of fear in the world, and one thing I notice about myself is that I'm very much pulling away from watching news sources because of the fear factor. There's an awful lot of people who are very worried about the geopolitical situation of the world and also environmental situation of the world. And again, do you think that music has a way of expressing these concerns and of a way of maybe bringing the global discussion together about these quite serious topics?
Well, that's more for the room for the musicians that lean into the sort of rock and hip hop categories. They've always been sort of countercultural, expressing their feelings, being quite explicitly, like NWA or Rage Against the Machine, to using more metaphors and subtleties, like Bruce Springsteen. I tried doing that a little bit on a side project that I did while I was doing like spoken word and rap. It was called Head Smoke, but I decided not to proceed on further with that, mainly because of the issue of sampling and trying to get clearance and paying royalties on something like that. So that is in a vault. I will never be able to share until, at the very least, I can get some capital, or at least someone can support it, because the music's there. I just am a bit fearful of a lawsuit from like BMG or EMI, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
But some
there.
Head Smoke stuff I did alternate and manipulate a little bit and turn MXQ ones by putting heavy filters and removing the lyrics.
Brilliant. There's definitely, in my experience from your work, is you can get that tension, and it's a very there's kind of an atmosphere of it in the sense that there's, say, a fear of a French planet, and then there is chaos, and there's this narrative about some of these grave concerns that we have in life in these present times. And I notice in, say, the artwork of your albums that there is the picture of the Grenfell Towers when they went on fire, and also there's the different snippet photographs in the Fear of a French Planet, and they seem to have a commentary element to them. Would you like to speak a little bit of what draws you towards the imagery that goes with your productions?
Yes, I can. Well, mainly I use them for satirical effects. That's always the biggest factor of them all. I know for Catastrophe and Artificial Intel, not so intelligent, those were actual illustrations that I did. And then with Sex Cells, that one was completely AI generated. I decided to go on a website and say, create a woman that looks like Mia Wallace from Pulp Fiction. But she's like sort of Japanese anime style, like a perfect blue Ghost in the Shell sort of thing, and try to see if it would make young men make their, pardon the expression, their get a stiffy. And
Yes.
by exploiting sort of political imagery or violence, whether in the form of nuclear explosion or destruction, or using sort of sexual imagery, like I did when I showed like a piss place in Nice, France, on Fear of a French Planet. It kind of throws the people off a little bit and gets people talking, because if you sometimes do something a little bit too abstract, it sometimes misses the point with people. Aphex Twin, he used to put his face on a lot of album covers and make it so distorted and unsettling. It creeped people out, but it got people's attention. And partly it's me being influenced by groups like Band Boards of Canada, and then to some extent like Public Enemy and Massive Attack, which is a bit more hip hop adjacent, but they were once to sort of provoke every now and again. They still do to this day. I know when I was looking at some of your album covers, they're certainly a lot more tranquil, understated, and peaceful, almost like what Geir Jensen did with Biosphere. Did you go for just like the ambient mood about it, or just because you thought those pictures looked very lovely?
I didn't tend to go. I'm kind of like yourself in the sense that I'm not trying to be lovely, and what I'm expressing isn't the pleasant side of the human experience. And actually, an awful lot of my work has a tension element to it, albeit maybe on the ambient side. It's still communicating that and attention that's there. The Western Shore is a metaphorical story of, trying to reach a destination, trying to reach the open space of the ocean. We've got the Atlantic to our west here, and trying to reach to the ocean. The imagery on that, like I hadn't really a choice, because the distributor was one was I didn't have the imagery that they were accepting at the time. But as I went on, I discovered how to override these technicalities, a bit like trying to figure out how to set up a Zoom meeting. In the beginning, you don't really know how, but you kind of develop it over time. So coming into piano and Harp Moonlight, that was my first of my own photography, where I've got a picture of like looking out from the back of my house here in the nighttime, looking over the fields. And I'd done a Photoshop of the moon, and I planted it on top. Lighthouse Calls, that one I done a digital drawing, and I also done that on Where the Eagle Flies. And the Where the Eagle Flies, I was trying to kind of portray the majesty of the eagle and the clouds and make it very kind of atmospheric. Origins. Now, Origins, it's interesting because I tried to make it look like an alien. It's actually a gemstone, and but it looks like an alien, and I was really taken by the otherworldliness of it. The album cover on Hibernia, it's actually a picture of the statue on my front gate. But I thought it kind of had a kind of a Greek mythological figure look to it, and Hibernia is the mythological Greek figure for Ireland, so it kind of matched there. Alfred, again, it's like this sto it's a small little pebble that I carved a face out of, and it kind of looks a little bit menacing in some respects. And then Ragnar's Chariot. We're out in Connemara, which is in the west of Ireland, and on a day out, and there was these horses in the mountains, and I took a picture of them, and that's where kind of Ragnar's Chariot is coming from. But although there's a tranquil element to the music, it tends to be on the melancholy, anxiety side of things, and I tend to be appealing to that side of the human condition more so than the happy side. And in some ways, that's cathartic in the sense that you're healing anxieties within oneself.
I would agree with that assessment about your music, because whilst, sort of happy-go-lucky stuff like Spice Girls, it's actually quite mellow, but also not brooding, but it definitely makes you think. It's thinking man's music, and that's what I totally have respect for. And it feels like it's multi-layered, and it could go for any sort of situational scenario. It doesn't have to be positive or negative. I think that's probably one of your biggest assets. Now, with that being said, because of the connotations with, if I'm pronouncing this right, Éire, the Gaelic word for Ireland, is
Era, yeah.
your songs and the mythology behind it connected with the Gaeltacht? If I pronounce that correctly, and if you still use some of the language.
Yeah, you've got what's called the Gaeltacht areas. That's where you've got the native Irish speaking areas of Ireland, and the government and the Irish culture in general has tried very hard to preserve the Irish language, to varying degrees of success. But Irish is still a very much an active language, especially in the western regions of the country. And I was very taken by when your Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth came to Ireland in Trinity College. She spoke Irish, and she spoke of the Anglo-Irish relationship and the connections that we have, and I was very taken by her knowledge of Ireland and our shared heritage. The Hibernia album is very much along the lines of Ireland as an island, as opposed to as a nation, and the different, like, because you've got the in Northern Ireland, you've got the Giant's Causeway. It's an absolutely stunning location. I think some films have been filmed in that area, and so, and then you've got other aspects such as the crowning of Queen Maeve. She would have been one of the old queens of ancient Ireland, and then you've got Solstice Chamber. That's like we have like a place called Newgrange, where it's a bit like Stonehenge, where you've got the real ancient history of our country, and the last song being the Children of Lir, and the story of the Children of Lir is where it's quite a it's a mythological story, and again it's a story that would have been in the in that would have been known within Ireland of where a spell was cast on the children of a king called Lir, and they became swans, and it's a mythological story. And I wanted the album to be cross borders, cross for all sections of the people who live on our island. And that's what I've tried to do, because sometimes Ireland is seen as, you know, I think we've Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, we've got an awful lot of shared heritage and culture, but sometimes there can be a division in terms of how we express our common ground, which is not to do with politics, it's to do with the share our shared culture. And the same with you know, and when Queen Elizabeth came and she spoke of that, I was some of that influence has been in it as well, is where we've tried to have shared culture and relationships.
I think that's rightfully honourable. I actually have never heard of this event until just now, even before her death. I
Yeah,
thought that
she
was a
was.
good gesture because, you know, I'm sorry to be a bit political here, but in, you know, in the UK, we often tend to have a sort of negatory view about Irish people that, for some reason, I never really had growing up. I've always found the culture, particularly through the language, quite stunning. I've always been a fan of the Celtic panpipe music in Enya, which I'm sure probably people ask you, do you know Enya? Do you know Enya? You probably are like,
Absolutely, yeah.
no, I bloody don't.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of my girlfriends also had strong connections, I think, with County Donegal. She
Yeah.
definitely had that sort of, what was the Celtic look, with the very dark hair and the piercing blue eyes? I miss her so much. So my connections with Ireland, while not on a sort of national or ethnic level, it's there. I respect that. But My Bloody Valentine is also one of my favorite bands from your country. And when I talk to people about that, more so than U2 or Westlife and people like that, people sort of look at me funny like, "Well, you don't like Bono?" I don't care about Bono. I like Kevin Shields because he also has that sort of atmospheric quality that you have. And then going back to the album covers, the one for Origins, and I think it reminds me of Cocteau Twins. I don't know if you were going for that or like that sort of shoegaze dream pop aesthetic.
Yeah, I liked the, I suppose the mood experiment with the with percussion. Percussion isn't a very strong element of my music, but I'm trying to get better at it, and hopefully I'm saving up for a bit of sampling equipment that will that has the pads that I can press that will be more responsive than the keyboards in terms of producing percussive sounds. So I've been trying to bring that out in the song outlook. And but like we both have produced music that has been a narrative towards the events of the world and are, I suppose, in some cases satirical, in other cases mythical, in a commentary on different aspects of the world. In Hibernia, like one thing that always struck me about being in Northern Ireland in Belfast is how hospitable the people were towards me, and I stayed near Stormont in a hotel up there. And people could not be more helpful, could not be nicer to me. And there's this kind of assumption that just because, say, you're from Ireland, that you won't blend in with people from a different community to you. Actually, people from other communities can be absolutely really, really hospitable, really, really pleasant towards you. So we have these assumptions about cultures and about where you're from. And but when you break it down, we're all people. And, when we've worked together as MXQ and Eamon Hayden, and when we shared our musical stories, these are the stories we're telling. Because in a world where you've got, say, Vladimir Putin on the nuclear button, we need to find these common grounds with each other and connect with people from different cultures and different parts of the world so that we don't have this assumption that because you're from somewhere or because you belong to a certain culture that's set in stone. We need to be reaching out to each other. And I think that's one of the brilliant pieces of the MXQ Eamon Hayden collaboration is that we've been trying to find common grounds in different styles and bring that to the world.
I would agree with that assessment, without giving too much away about the music that we do, but you will definitely be surprised by the mixture of styles and feelings that go involved. The same can't be said for a lot of people. I
Oh,
mean,
sorry. There's a lag, which I just to be aware for people who are listening. I was just wondering. One of the things that has been on my mind is that in the collaboration, do you think that there's influences within work that relates to being living in a different environment, living in a different country? Has there been a development there in terms of where people are from very different environments of coming together and both individually and collaboratively?
well, much to people's surprise, I actually lived mostly in a rural in type of environment when I was growing up. I never really lived in the big city, or the most I've lived as far as like the biggest city is concerned is an area population of about 120,000 people. That's the highest I've been, and that was when I was in America. I'm partly American, but also partly British, so I've got sort of the best of both worlds. Although my sensibilities, music-wise and culture-wise, are very much Anglo or British, but I do have quite a bit of respect for my Celtic brothers, particularly those who are from Cymru or Eire. I don't know if I
Yes.
pronounced that right. Is it Eire or Eire?
Era. Era would be how you'd pronounce the EIRE, and the Irish vocabulary, the grammar of Ireland, it's quite a unique grammar. And I remember trying to explain it that when you say something sometimes in languages, there sometimes can be how you construct sentences can be very different in different languages, and that's why languages are so interesting. But Éire would be the pronunciation of Ireland, and I'm quite taken by your interest. One thing I've noticed about your work is your interest in the Celtic culture.
And it's just that intrigue about it, and also as a man, I find a lot of Celtic women with the very dark hair and stuff quite stunning to look at. And
Absolutely,
that's
yeah.
always, a bit of a draw for me. And the fact that I'm a fan of My Bloody Valentine, who are from Ayr, and then bands like Croí Ba Chraoitheog and Super Furry Animals, who are from Cymru. Definitely adds to the discussion a little bit, and with Scotland or Alba, they had boards of Canada and Cocteau Twins who are from like the Lothian side, like nearby Edinburgh or Livingston. Certainly is a point of discussion for a lot of people as well. And I want to do accents every now and again, but if I try doing like a Irish accent, like someone's from County Clonmel, paper might sound a little bit stereotypical. Do you want to
Actually,
prepare?
you've gone quite well. I'm impressed.
And between you and me, I'm a fan of Baileys Irish Cream on the rocks.
Absolutely, yeah.
Never go wrong. And apart from the
Absolutely,
black
yeah.
stuff, you like that?
I do, yeah. Actually, the non-alcoholic Guinness is quite very nice because sometimes when you're driving, you now got the pleasure of being able to take the non-alcoholic Guinness, and I'm surprisingly fond of it. When I used to live in Dublin, now this is a lot, I'm now living back in my home area, but when I lived 2 years in Dublin, and sometimes you could this Guinness brewery is very close to the Dublin city centre, but sometimes the smell of the brewing process can be smelt in the city, and it's a really, really lovely smell. And it's one of the things that people don't say about Dublin is, you've got the smell of the Guinness Brewery. In terms of Wales and the United Kingdom and Scotland, I remember doing a hiking up in the Brecon Beacons in South Wales, and it's a stunning, stunning place to go. And up Scotland, I mean, it's an epic country as far as scenery and architecture is concerned. It's really, really, really stunning place to go. I'd love to go to Cornwall. I've never been, and I'd love to see some of Brunel's, the Severn Bridge and some of these, the Brunel history and the engineering that went behind that. And hopefully at some point I'll be able to go to London. I have this thing about St. Paul's Cathedral, and I'd love to see the Sir Christopher Wren's architecture. It's been but at the minute work is not permitting me, but so there's so much to see in both our countries, and it's nice to be able to, I suppose, share stories about what attracts us to different places.
I hope to stop by in Dublin or Sligo sometime in the future. It probably might not be happening now, but who knows? like to see how things have turned out since I was last in Éire or Dublin. I was last in
Yeah.
2008 and I was last there in 1998 or 1999. I went with my father to the St. James Gate Brewery, but
Yeah.
that was a long time ago. I was certainly not old enough to have a pint of the black stuff, I'll tell you that. But
Yeah. Yeah, no, Dublin is a lovely place to go, and Sligo, there's some really nice scenery up there, and there's certainly so much to see and do, and I suppose like we're also like the United Kingdom, and we've got an awful lot of challenges within our society in terms of, you know, there being the rich and the poor, in terms of homelessness at the minute in Ireland, it's becoming quite a problem, and so, but at all the other end of the scale, there is so much opportunity in life as well, and you know, and I think that it's a brighter world when you've got that sense of adventure and that sense of experimentation. And I was quite taken by how you said how you produced your work through improvisation, where you've used with technology, where you've had to work with limitations Creative
and
people can be when we work with what we've got and we try and make the best of it. And what you've come up creatively is absolutely stunning.
and the same for you too. In all honesty, the most I had to spend in terms of my music when I made sex sales, it cost me nothing. And after selling the iPad and then, with a few other things, the electricity bill, it really didn't cost me anything to make the album, and I always do them quite quickly so that way I can get on with other creative endeavors and work opportunities. As that, I'm not like Bono or Enya where I've got all the sort of money and residuals to do whatever I please. But in this life, you've got to do with what you can. But I will counter a point about here. I would say you fellas have it quite lucky compared to the British, not only with EU privileges, because you can go to France or Germany without much restrictions. We British people don't have that, especially since 2021. And also, we've been dubbed the sick man of Europe. But at the same time, it does sadden me to see the poverty in Ireland from the news headlines I see on RTE. To where many Irish people emigrated to Australia and Canada because that's where you get more money.
Yeah, I think the sad thing about there's a cycle of wealth and there's a cycle of poverty, and each country goes through the same cycle. We had what's called the Celtic Tiger, and where there has been, you know, but it was a few, certain parts of our society gained where others didn't, and I think that's in all societies. Of course, there's been pro-Brexit and there's been different events in the world, and it's very frightening, you know, the geopolitical tensions that are out there. Nevertheless, there is also the opportunity, and there's working with limitations, and there's, you know, there's so much in life that with the human spirit and connecting with that and finding our common ground, and eventually, I mean, Britain might be seen as the scapegoat of Europe at this point in time, but you know, we've got more in common than divisions. And I was never a fan of Brexit. I don't mean to be political about it, because I was worried about the people's wealth and prosperity and, you know, the freedom to travel and things like that. But nevertheless, we are where we are. And but I think that we've got more in common. And I think as time goes by, and we will figure it out, and you know, the human spirit will, even though there's always going to be problems in the world, there's always the opportunities to resolve those problems. And it's a bit like in your music, how you worked with, you know, even computers that you didn't own because you had to improvise. Imagine the work that you produced with that, and you know, so that's what we can achieve. And that's the story of your work, and that's the story of our work is seeking out what can be done with so little.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the story of so many great musicians. I'm sure, when My Bloody Valentine started, they didn't have any money. I think they still have money problems because the second album, Loveless, got the record label broke. But they made do with what they could, and by golly, they delivered. But yeah, as much as I can tell you, I don't know what your favorite Irish band is, but I'm just a little bit curious. You don't have to tell me if it's Enya, because people will say that because they think, oh, new
I know
wave.
it's cliche, but actually, yeah, no, Enya is definitely up there. I think I have her album here somewhere. There's been, no, I know it's cliche to like U2, but I actually do like U2 because I was in school when some of their major albums came out. So, and they were, I suppose, the big Ireland. And culturally, I remember the time when Riverdance came out. That was kind of an iconic moment in Irish history because before the Celtic Tiger, Ireland was quite a an undeveloped nation, and this.
So, on behalf of MXQ, me, Eamon Hayden, our guest on here, we would just like to say thanks to one another for having this opportunity to talk and communicate about our music and our craft. It's been a very entertaining interview slash podcast. If you have any last questions or thoughts, I'm happy to let us know.
I definitely would like to thank you, MXQ, for having me on your show. And I definitely would like to thank you for giving me the opportunity to collaborate with you. We're not going to give away any spoilers, but it's going to be a really exciting piece of work. I'm very proud of it, and I hope you are too, because it just goes to show what two people who've never met can produced together, and I'm really excited about our piece of work, and I'm very proud of it.
Same here as well. I'm just happy to have the opportunity to communicate with probably the greatest fan of my music.
Yes, and definitely one of the things I would try to say to every musician or everyone who's thinking of getting into music is to have that confidence and to know that your what you have got to say, musically speaking, is of value. And that's the connection that you make as a musician. And I've been very honored to be part of this project, and I'm definitely looking forward to listening to the work that you're going to have coming down the line. And I have been honored to be on your show here this evening.
You're very welcome. I hope you take care now. Until then,
And
bless us.
okay, thank you, and goodbye to everybody in the audience.